Coming up on this week's mini episode of the Drew Perowit Podcast.
We don't often see much improvement when people have cognitive decline associated with Alzheimer's, but they saw simply by getting folks' magnesium levels up, they saw that their brain's aging reversed, their cognitive ability improved, simply by addressing this one key nutrient.
So the other day, I was with a doctor who specializes in environmental toxins, and they told me that the most toxic item in our home is actually our mattress. I'm sure many of you were shocked to hear that, as I was. This is especially scary when the average person spends more than 26 years of their life sleeping. We spend so much time in bed, but it's crazy that we're more likely to splurge on an expensive car or clothes. Well, I'm advocating for a better mattress for you. Most mattresses on the market, though, contain harmful chemicals and polyurethane foam, which emits things like volatile organic compounds, or VOCs. They've been linked to respiratory issues, reproductive damage, and they can even damage your immunity. I spent a lot of time, looking for the perfect organic mattress, and I was so happy to find the Birch Mattrix by Helix. The Birch is made right here in the U.S. out of four non-toxic natural materials: organic latex, organic cotton, New Zealand wool, and American steel springs. It feels so great to know that I'm sleeping on a mattress that uses 0000 polyurethane-based foams. That means no off-gassing. Have you ever got a new mattress and you open it up and it smells like crap? That's called off-gassing. The Birch mattress doesn't do that. So now I can sleep a lot better knowing that I'm not exposing myself to harmful chemicals day in and day out. And the best part is, this mattress is crazy comfortable. You don't have to give up comfort when you choose the non-toxic option. I've honestly never slept better. So if you're looking for a new mattress, I highly recommend checking out the Birch. Right now, they're giving my community $200 off all mattresses plus two Eco Reset pillows. Just head over to birchliving.com/Drew. Again, that's $200 off and two free Eco Reset pillows at Birch, B-I-R-C-H, living, L-I-V-I-N-G.com/Drew, spelled differently, D-H-R-U. If you're worried about trying a new mattress, by the way, they have a 25-year warranty and you can try it risk-free for 100 nights. Birch also ships directly to your door for free with no contact required, and they'll pick it up for free if you don't love it. Check out the Birch mattress today by Helix. There's a reason I've talked to so many of our experts on the podcast about magnesium. This super mineral is needed for over 600 enzymatic reactions in your body. In fact, every single cell contains it and needs it to function. Magnesium is essential for stress management and restful sleep because of its influence on our neurotransmitters. It supports insulin sensitivity and fights the risk of type 2 diabetes. And magnesium also reduces C-reactive protein and other markers of inflammation, among so many other crucial functions. I personally started taking magnesium to help with my sleep, especially when I travel, and it's been a game changer. But I don't just take any old magnesium. I take BioOptimizer's Magnesium Breakthrough. It contains seven different forms of magnesium, which all have different functions in the body. I haven't found anything else like it on the market. BioOptimizer's is great because all their products are soy-free, gluten-free, lactose-free, non-GMO, free of chemicals and fillers, made with all natural ingredients. Right now, BioOptimizers is offering my community a few special bundles. And for a limited time, BioOptimizers is also giving away free bottles of their best-selling products, P3OM and Mazzymes, with select purchases. Just head over to magbreakthrough.com/Drew with the code Drew10. That's mag, M-A-G, breakthrough, BREAKTHROUGH.com/DHRU with the code Drew10. That's DHRU10. Now let's get back to today's episode. Hi everyone, Drew Perowit here. Food isn't like medicine. It is medicine. What we eat is literally transformed into tissue throughout our bodies, creating this vessel that lets us live our lives and accomplish our goals and dreams. When it comes to nutrition and health, people often think about improving their weight or their heart health. But our brain should be one of the top focuses for a long and happy life. And there are so many foods that we can eat every single day with the nutrients that specifically support it. In today's mini episode, I speak with Sean Stevenson and Drew Ramsey, Dr. Drew Ramsey, two of my dear friends, about the top foods for brain health and some of the most informative studies on using food as medicine, specifically for the brain. Let's listen in, starting with my dear friend, Sean Stevenson, the author of the international best-selling book, Sleep Smarter, and the creator of the Model Health Show, one of the top health podcasts in the world. Sean has been featured in Forbes, Fast Company, New York Times, and all those other outlets that are out there. He's also an in-demand keynote speaker for numerous organizations, universities, and conferences. Let's listen in, starting with Sean Stevenson. And I want to start off by this study that you mentioned inside of Eat Smarter. Mm-hmm. And it was around Alzheimer's and a particular nutrient. Tell us what that nutrient is and how this nutrient was shown to have a significant reversal on our age.
Yeah. So the current science, when we're looking at Alzheimer's, you know, it's a really, really difficult situation. There's not much as far as peer-reviewed evidence on being able to reverse this condition and see much improvement. It's a lot of times just trying to slow down the progression. But now there's so much evidence coming out and so many wonderful scientists are asking these questions like, what can we do? Let's try this thing. Let's try that thing. And the funny thing is it's circling back to the world of nutrition. But it, of course, makes sense because your brain is literally made from food. And we know today that, you know, Alzheimer's is largely tied to this, we're calling it type 3 diabetes, this insulin resistance taking place in the brain. And so looking at what are the nutrients that help to regulate our insulin response? What are the nutrients that help to normalize and heal brain cells to create neurogenesis and spark the creation of new brain cells? We know some of this data. So what is the application here? So this nutrient that I'm going to tell you about is tied to something else, which is the main thing that your brain is made of, which is water. All right. And this is so, again, you mentioned this, simple, but it's so overlooked. Right around 75% of the brain is actually made of water. And we say that, but we don't really get it and really honor it. So the structural integrity of the brain itself, so the white matter, the gray matter, the cerebral spinal fluid, like that liquid that the brain is kind of housed in and taking care, kind of creating a condition or shock absorption. All of this is based on water. But it's not just water. And this is one of the big problems that I was taught in my university and even high school and even elementary. We were inundated with this idea that water is H2O. That's it, H2O. And that is a massive mistake because in nature, you never find H2O by itself anywhere. It doesn't exist. Through our evolution, water is known as a universal solvent because it's always combining with things in our environment. And so what water really is, as far as what we've evolved consuming, is H2O with other things dissolved into it, specifically minerals, right? So that mineral density determines things ranging from the pH, the total dissolved solids, all those things. And these minerals are incredibly important in the construct of water because they enable conductivity, if we talk about electrolytes specifically, right? So what are electrolytes? These are minerals that have an electrical currency or an electrical potential, right? And our body is running on this electrical currency. And so I'm gonna share with you two of these. I'm going to share the one that you mentioned in a moment, but I want to share one that is more obvious. Well, not so obvious today, actually, which is sodium. And sodium has been found, this was researchers at McGill University, found that sodium works as an on-off switch in the brain that literally is turning on neurological programs and turning them off, many of which protect the brain against neurological diseases. We don't hear about the importance of sodium. We hear it more demonized. Right? It's vilified as this bad guy causing high blood pressure, causing issues with brain health. But it's without context. There's no nuance there. It's just like, this thing is bad. Be careful. Watch your sodium. Watch your salt. And these things are used interchangeably. And that's another problem because salt isn't sodium, but it is our biggest dietary source of sodium. Salt is about 60% chloride, 40% sodium. But there's many other types of salt. There's magnesium salt. There's potassium salts. But what folks really kind of get mixed up is that the biggest intake of our sodium is from processed foods in our culture today in the standard American diet. So about 70 to upwards of 80% of the sodium people are taking in are from highly refined, hyper-processed foods. And so when you start to move away from that a little bit, all of a sudden, we can find ourselves in a sodium deficiency. And you would think, again, like, that's not a bad thing. But sodium is a major electrolyte concerning your neurological function. So again, researchers at McGill University found that sodium works as an on-off switch in the brain that determine things like memory, reaction time, but also they protect the brain against neurological diseases. So that's one. The other electrolyte that's found with water, usually in nature, sodium, and the one that you mentioned earlier is magnesium. So this was an adventure to get to this point because this is so fascinating in the context of Alzheimer's. And this was a, and I love this, it's a double-blind, placebo-controlled clinical trial. And this was published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease, and it found that improving magnesium levels in adult test subjects, and these folks were between 50 and 70 years of age, could potentially reverse the brain, aging in the brain, by almost 10 years. All right? Now, specifically looking at Alzheimer's disease, this was published in the journal Neuron, found that magnesium is able to restore critical brain plasticity and improve cognitive function. And neuroplasticity is the ability of the brain to adapt and to evolve. And looking at this specifically with Alzheimer's patients, and again, I mentioned this earlier, this is a randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trial. We don't often see much improvement when people have cognitive decline associated with Alzheimer's, but they saw simply by getting folks' magnesium levels up, they saw that their brain's aging reversed, their cognitive ability improved, simply by addressing this one key nutrient. But it's not just some isolated magical nutrient. It works in concert. There's none of this is operating in a vacuum. That's why I mentioned sodium first. All of this works together to create this kind of whole brain functioning, if that makes sense.
Let's continue that storytelling on top brain foods and things that really allow us to function, think optimally, cognitive performance. And the next thing I want to get into is that I want to talk about fats.
Yes.
And there's certain fats that are able to cross the blood-brain barrier, which might be worthwhile revisiting just to explain to folks what that is. And two of the most important and abundant fat structures in the brain are omega-3 fatty acids and EPA and DHA. Talk to us a little bit more about that and some of the research that you've come across.
Absolutely. So the dry weight of the brain, so this is without water. So water is the most abundant thing within the human brain. From there, the quote dry weight of the brain is fat, protein, then a sprinkling of carbs and minerals is in there as well. But protein is also incredibly important in this conversation. It's not that far removed. So about 11% fat, about 8% protein. All right. So we don't want to negate protein, but fat is so freaking important. Of the dry weight of the brain, it's the most important macronutrient. Your brain is literally made primarily of fat if we're talking about macronutrients. So how does this all work? Well, this starts off in the womb. And this also is carried out once we are born and we're breastfeeding. Mother's milk, if we're talking about that dietary construct, it is so abundant in fat. Specifically, about 50% of the fat found in human breast milk is saturated fat. Again, this is one of those things that's been vilified that it's so bad for us. Why is the very thing we know for certain that humans are designed to consume when we are born? Why is that thing so bad? If 50%, upwards of 50% of the fat in mother's milk is saturated fat. So for cognitive development of babies, and as a matter of fact, there was a study that I just came across looking at if not only just the saturated fat, but getting to this point, DHA and EPA, and that construct, the amount of DHA and EPA in mother's milk, and seeing that direct when and this was a multi-country study as well. It's an observational study, but they took into account other factors as well. They did a really good job. But they found that mother's milk that had the highest constitution of EPA and DHA, their children performed about 20% better on cognitive skills tests. All right. So we're talking about the template for our brains and what it's made of. Now, as we move into adulthood, now, just to be clear, this doesn't mean that guzzling saturated fat is going to make your brain work better necessarily. The gates that allow in saturated fat actually start to decrease. But saturated fat is so important, your brain makes it itself. All right. So your brain literally can make its own saturated fat when it needs to. So getting it dietarily, this isn't saying saturated fat is bad, but it's also not saying that this is the primary brain fuel, because it's nuanced. What is a primary brain fuel for our from dietary perspective is EPA and DHA. These are critical. This is one of the most important takeaways from this episode today. And so researchers that they decided to do, again, another randomized controlled trial. This was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition to see what is the direct impact of DHA and EPA. And so what they did was they simply gave folks an increased intake of DHA and EPA versus a placebo. And they found that the folks just within a matter of weeks consuming DHA and EPA had a dramatic increase in memory and their reaction time just by including more of these nutrients. And so that started already. I'm just fascinated by this. So I'm like, why? What's going on here? Well, these essential fatty acids, DHA and EPA, these are known as structural fats in the brain. All right. So we know about white adipose tissue. We know about, you know, visceral fat, subcutaneous fat. Those are storage fats. The brain doesn't have storage fats, thankfully, because during times of a famine, if you had storage fats in your brain, your brain...
End up eating your brain.
Yeah, you'd end up eating your brain for fuel. So it's good that we don't have storage fats. But the structural fats of the brain, EPA and DHA, are largely a big part of that. And what they allow for is signal transduction, like we talked about with electrolytes. They work in tandem with electrolytes to provide plasticity for the brain cells, form, structure, strength. That's how important these essential fatty acids are. And to lean into this further, so as I was digging into this, some of the most fascinating research, and these folks, these scientists actually use fMRIs and to actually look at the brain and see what's going on in the with the brain with intake of DHA and EPA. And they found that folks who had the lowest intake of DHA, specifically DHA was the most important, had the highest rate of brain shrinkage. So their brains were shrinking when they had a low intake of DHA and EPA as well, but DHA was even more prominent. And so what they found was that number was, if it's below about four teaspoons a day of DHA, I'm sorry, 4 grams. It's about 4 grams. Anything under that had accelerated brain shrinkage. The optimal range was 6 grams of DHA and EPA. These are people who had shrink-proof brains. Again, when we're talking about cognitive performance, with the brain, size matters. You know, this is one of those things that we don't want to lose brain volume. It's going to be correlated with a loss of cognitive function for sure, if you're literally losing your brain. And so this is how important DHA and EPA are. So when I said that this is one of the most important takeaways from this episode, I want everybody to be so adamant moving forward about getting their water in and getting in DHA and EPA specifically. What are the best dietary sources? And this is what I love about you as well. Like, we have that food first tenet. Where can we find this in its whole food form that's been used for the greatest amount of time? Number one, and this is working along with folks like, you know, Lisa Moscone out of NYU and people who are, again, looking at the brain and seeing, do these nutrients actually have an impact? She shared with me that caviar and salmon roe are the best sources of dietary DHA and EPA. And at the time, this was a few years ago when we were hanging out, caviar wasn't on my radar. You know, like, I didn't grow up around anything like that. So I saw it on, I literally knew it from Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous with Robin Leach. It was like a TV show. It was like the pre-Cribs.
Maybe a little bit of a mention on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Right, exactly, you know? And so this was like pre-MTV Cribs. So this was like an original, like seeing how stars are living, right? And I remember caviar and this kind of thing. So I'm just like, wow, really? Because we often attribute fatty fish, which is an incredible source, again, of DHA and EPA. Salmon, mackerel, sardines, these are really, really dense sources. But if you're going gram for gram, you're gonna find maybe 3 times more DHA and EPA in fish eggs than in the fish itself. So salmon, roe, and caviar. Now again, I'm gonna give multiple options for people. If that's not speaking to you, you don't have to run out and guzzle caviar. As a matter of fact, it'll probably cost a little bit too. So, but again, if you look at something like that, like, oh wow, folks realized the value a long time ago of these things. They put a higher price point on it. The same thing with salt. The name salary is derived from the word meaning salt, the etymology of it, because people were paid in salt. I just saw this, I don't know what's wrong with me or right with me, but I've just watched these random documentaries. And I was looking at this story of these goats. Have you seen the goats that climb up on these walls?
Yeah.
And they're like sideways, like, what in the world are they thinking? They're like, 200, 300 feet up in the air.
Yeah, like on this vertical, like completely vertical.
They're vertical, and they have their babies, the little baby goats come up. They're called kids, right? Mm-hmm. The baby goats are called kids. They have their kids coming up on this wall, and these dudes are just terrified watching this, and they're doing it to be able to lick the minerals coming out of that, you know, certain places that might be in that dam, for example. Sodium, right? Salt is so important. And again, there's multiple kinds of salt. Potassium salt, magnesium salt. They're willing to risk their life to get it, right? So anyways, putting all this back with DHA and EPA, we got salmon roe, we've got caviar, we've got whole fish, fatty fish, salmon, mackerel, sardines, and many others. And then from there, we go to, and by the way, we're going to get to some vegan sources as well. This is very important. But then we go to grass-fed beef. It's going to be a great source potentially of these omega-3 fatty acids. But there's a big distinction between grass-fed and grain-fed. There's data, and I go in multiple times over and over again showing the difference in grass-fed versus conventional beef in the book, because people need to know that conversation. It isn't just hearsay anymore. From there, we've got eggs, the egg yolk specifically, great source of DHA and EPA, and they can even be enriched as well. But now we get into, what about the vegetarian sources? And this is where things get a little bit complicated, because for years as a nutritionist in my clinical practice, I was having folks, I mean, I'm talking, this was 15 years ago, hemp seeds, chia seeds, all of it. I'm having people take, you know, hemp oil, get their omega-3s, right?
Because at the time you also were vegetarian.
Yeah. So, and I've done everything, like, and I'll do it years at a time to experiment with myself. And thankfully in my practice, I got away from having everybody doing what I was doing and instead focusing on what they need, which is really the move forward. And what's happening now is personalized nutrition. That's the wave of the future. But, you know, that's again, it. I've been doing that and teaching that for a long time. So with that said, I was missing the point, because that type of omega-3 is ALA. It's not DHA and EPA. All right, DHA and EPA are the ones that have express access into the brain. ALA does have a role and is important, but DHA and EPA is so important, and your body won't do the opposite. Your body will convert ALA into DHA and EPA, but you can lose upwards of 70, 80, 90% in the conversion process, depending on your metabolism for being able to do that conversion. So to get the amount of DHA, we're talking about that bare minimum being 4 grams. To get that from a plant source, you're going to need to have a couple of cups of chia seeds. You know, like, it's just not viable if you ever want to leave the bathroom, you know, so it's not efficient, not effective. So what do? We can get in some from those sources, flax seeds, hemp seeds, chia seeds, all that good stuff. But I implore you, if you're doing a vegetarian approach, there's two other wrongs. We've got krill oil, which, depending on where you lie in your ethics, which is, and I'm going to find another name for this, because when I say it, just the name, I think it can throw people off. It's a microscopic shrimp. Emphasis on microscopic, all right? It is so, it's not like a shrimp like you would think. It's microscopic, and it's abundant in oceans. This is what whales primarily feed on. It's so rich in nutrients that can create a massive brain. Like, whales are hyper-intelligent as well, if you look at some of the data on that as well. But anyways, krill is a viable option, but it's also rich in astaxanthin, which is this powerful antioxidant that helps to protect the omega-3s in there, the DHA and EPA, from oxidation. 9 times out of 10, it's going to be a higher quality source than you might find in conventional fish oils because of that protection from oxidation. And the reason I'm saying krill oil first is because we have peer-reviewed evidence on its effectiveness. All right, so we've got that with food. We've got it with fish oil, we've got it with krill oil, but not as much. 9 out of 10 peer-reviewed studies on omega-3s, DHA, and EPA are done with fish oil.
Right.
So we've got to acknowledge that. Not saying it's the best source, and you got to be careful with your sourcing. Krill oil, it's gaining some traction. It's being studied a lot more now. The next option of full plant source would be algae oil. We do know the DHA and EPA is there, but we got to keep in mind we don't have a lot of peer-reviewed evidence on it. But at minimum, I want to, again, put this emphasis, I implore you to make sure today to get your DHA and EPA to literally protect your brain from shrinkage. And this isn't like, it's cold outside, you get into a cold plunge or whatever, shrinkage for guys. It's not that kind of shrinkage. It's like, this isn't the kind you can bounce back from easily.
Right. Once you shrink your brain, I mean, it's very hard to come back from that.
Exactly. So just, I want everybody to keep that in mind, how important our hydration is, and DHA and EPA is absolutely critical.
My next guest, Dr. Drew Ramsey, is a psychiatrist, author, farmer, and founder of the Brain Food Clinic in New York City. He's the author of 4 books, most recently Eat to Beat Depression and Anxiety. He lives with his wife and 2 children in New York City and on their 127-acre organic farm in rural Indiana. Dr. Ramsey and I dive deep into the 12 most important nutrients for the brain. Let's listen in. You know, there's this great section in the book called 12 Nutrients for Better Brain Health. And when I was opening and sharing about our audience, I think on the big picture, when it comes to gut microbiome, the gut-brain connection, you know, inflammation, I feel like our audience is very well versed in that topic just because we address it, you know, almost every other episode we talk about some aspect of it. But I would love to use these explanations that you have inside of here. For example, you were just talking about iron, right? Now, a lot of people have heard about iron in the context of, you know, somebody might say like, I'm anemic and I'm iron deficient. But they often don't think about iron and the role that it plays in and the mechanism that it plays when it comes to our brain health. So walk us through kind of some of the stuff and why did you include iron in there? And what did you want people to know about this nutrient and why it's one of the 12 nutrients for better brain health?
Yeah. So everybody's got a piece of food advice for you these days, everyone listening. And so I wanted to be really clear in this book, kind of where I came up with these foods, my method for thinking about food, which I think is a little different as opposed to trying to really help people move towards a dietary pattern based on, let's say, ethical values like a vegan diet or, you know, certain pieces of science, avoiding certain foods for this reason or that reason. I really wanted to be very straightforward of looking for what nutrients are most related to the most disabling illness in the world, which is depression. And by extension, as depression and anxiety kind of weave together, what can we learn about the most important nutrients? And there are 12 of them in the literature that really stand out. Iron is one of them. Zinc is another. Omega-3 fats are another. B12, you know, a lot of nutrients that we hear about. And by strongly related in the science, meaning there's strong correlational data. You don't eat enough iron or you have an anemia, you get real significant depression and mood problems and anxiety problems. And then also treatment data that, for example, if you give people an iron supplement when you treat them with antidepressant, they get better faster. So when we found the nutrients, those 12 nutrients have both of these kind of types of data around them. And then I always want to illustrate, like, what does this do in your brain? Because that's my business. Brain food is my business. Your brain is what I'm trying to change. And iron is so interesting. One, just your brain requires so much oxygen, right? And so part of keeping a healthy vascular system and having healthy red blood cells is the transport of oxygen. The other is that iron is involved in the biochemical pathways that make those brain chemicals lots of people have heard of: norepinephrine, dopamine, serotonin. It's a cofactor in those chemical reactions. And so I like people knowing a little bit around the how these nutrients function in our brain, because I think that connection helps us make those choices. You know, you're not just eating fish because some expert says so. You're eating fatty seafood because you have a knowledge about why EPA and DHA, the long-chain omega-3 fats, are absolutely vital to healthy, vibrant brains. I just think that empowers people. I mean, that's the point of sharing this knowledge, I think, is mental health. Sure, if you need help from an expert like me, please come. That's what we do. We're good at it. It's getting treatment in mental health might be hard, but getting people better in mental health settings, I don't think is that hard. We have a lot of resources. But I think people really need to reprioritize and focus on their mental health and mental fitness and how to really achieve that every day. So high iron foods are part of that, like foods that have these other nutrients are part of that.
Yeah. And give us a couple high iron foods that are part of your favorites that you want.
Yeah. So my high iron side. So when I talk about iron, one of my favorite high iron foods are clams, because clams are also one of the top foods for vitamin B12. They actually are the top vitamin B12 containing food. I love some of the plant-based options. Cashews are the nuts with the most iron, and nuts are something we're always snacking on in our house. My wife and I, we've got a couple of kids, 10 and 7. And so we do a lot of traveling. We're kind of partially nomadic. And so we've always got a bag of like raw cashews or raw almonds with us. Another surprising high iron food for people are things like liver. One of the reasons that a lot of folks are looking at traditional diets and offal meats, you know, organ meats, is just they're very nutrient dense. And then pepitas, pumpkin seeds, that's one of my favorites just because I'm always putting those in my pesto, for example, or dropping those in salads. Again, it's a plant-based form. You don't absorb quite as much, but you know, the point is to get a lot of nutrient density and you want a mix of plant and animal iron sources. You asked about foods. I wanted to answer that question. And that's why in this book, I have these power players. And the reason was I wanted in to represent the food categories. So, you know, it's not that you have to like kale, but there's a reason that kale is a great representative of the leafy green food category because it's so nutrient dense, it's so versatile, it's so, I guess, controversial in the sense that, I don't know, people are now thinking that maybe kale isn't healthy, which is totally untrue, bad, horrible misinformation that's, I don't even want to start talking about it, Drew, I'm going to get too upset. But these power players, like an anchovy, they're there to serve as a kind of, you know, not just if you don't eat anchovies, it's fine. You can eat to beat depression, it's anxiety, but to serve as a real kind of perfect archetypal example of that food category. So an anchovy, high in omega, 87 milligrams of DHA in one little anchovy. You get a complete protein, B12, calcium, all these nutrients. And then, you know, you get to usually the challenge with people in anchovies, which is they don't know what to do with them. I didn't. You know, do you get the paste? Do you get them in olive oil? Do you get them in soybean oil? Do you get them in water? And that's where I think people struggle to do something new, especially if we're hungry, especially if we're feeding a family. And that's where I hope the recipes in the book help people of really try and just make these foods accessible, things like dashi, things like ceviche, things like the pesto, where you know, no matter where you are on the kind of eater scale, there are ways that we can improve your nutrient density. And that's the hope of the book. Yeah. And dark chocolate's on the power players. Let's just say that was purely for food marketing. No, I'm kidding. Dark chocolate has amazing mental health benefits. I mean, in the literature, in the data, and it's one of, I think, a great example of how, as a psychiatrist, I want people to think a little differently about food, that I want it to be a joyful and hedonistic experience for you. I don't want dark chocolate to be like your guilty treat you get one day a week because you followed all these rules. That's not how I roll as a psychiatrist and as a food shrink. I want dark chocolate to be part of your daily existence because it's delicious, it's great for your brain, and it's packed with nutrients.
What's your favorite dark chocolate? If you want to give a shout out or a plug to any kind of brands that are out there.
A couple. I mean, I've got like four or five different brands right here with me. I like the Hue, the cashew butter with a little bit of red. That's my guilty treat. That's not a solid dark chocolate, but that's just such a good yumminess.
Good job with that brand. Amazing. I was an investor in that brand myself and Dr. Hyman, and they just recently sold, and just the team there, they just did a great job of just getting a better for you chocolate. Cause I think that another part of this is like, you can enjoy things like dark chocolate, especially, I mean, by nature, we're saying dark chocolate, it's going to not have a lot of other gunk, but still there's naturally greenwashing that happens in the field that's out there. So you can even find dark chocolates that have, they say dark chocolate, but they make that up with a ton of sugar inside. Oh. And now you're not getting the benefits don't translate exactly the same way.
Exactly. The way that my favorite dark chocolate is from the La Anita cacao rainforest kind of farm in Costa Rica. We went down there and I really actually, one of the recipes in the book, the buckwheat cacao pancakes is inspired by that. I never had cacao nibs and pancakes before. And it totally changed my brunch and in my life. I mean, I just love cacao nibs, but that's really in terms of palate development. Also a lot of people listening, if you've been, and a lot of Drew's listeners probably are, you know, you're off the processed food, but if you're got artificial flavoring, sweeteners, processed foods still creeping into your life, one of the nice things about the whole food journey is you develop, your palate really develops. And so for me now, like a cacao bean, you know, to chew on that is pretty close to dark chocolate in terms of my just experience and enjoyment of it, even though it's just the bean. But dark chocolate is I think a good example of a really nutrient dense food, lots of fiber, lots of magnesium, iron, but also, you know, a food that people aren't oriented towards in a way that it's anything other than, you know, I don't know, like the not healthy version or the not fun, what Seth Rogen called it, the not fun version of milk chocolate. I was like, that's so not true. It's like so much more dopamine you get from the dark chocolate.
I know. Dark chocolate is amazing. Let's take a step back. What is it specifically that made watercress score so high and be number one on the list? And then how is that something that you're integrating into your diet if you are?
Yeah. So watercress scored high is all leafy greens do because they just don't have any calories. So a cup of kale has 33 calories and a cup of watercress has less than that. And so when you have so few calories, that's why you're going to top any nutrition you bring to the table, you're going to top out these nutrient density scales. Watercress, I've incorporated in my diet because it's a leafy green that I never ate before at all. It's very spicy. I do a lot of arugula. And then one of the fun things about this kind of work is how much you get to learn about food. And so I didn't know that watercress, for example, is a big part of a Haitian diet. And people in Haiti eat water. I met a woman from Haiti who said, we eat watercress almost every day in Haiti. And I had no idea. So that kind of led me into being curious about this food. And I can't find it that much. I always think it's a little blessing from the universe. I did an interview with our friend, Dr. Rupi, the Doctor's Kitchen. And I was out in Wyoming and I'm like looking for stuff to make pesto with. I can't find this. And there's this giant display of watercress. And so, you know, sometimes it shows up in my life and I try and it's one of those ones I'm working on though. It's a little bit of a challenging one.
Yeah. Sometimes Asian stores, if you go to like the traditional sort of Asian markets, if you live in a bigger city and have access to it, you can find some over there. I want to go back to these 12 nutrients for better brain because there's just so much gold inside of there. And I want to give a little bit of a preview of some of the stuff inside the book. So I want to pick a couple of them as we kind of wind down the interview that typically don't get maybe the attention that they deserve. Yeah, some of these nutrient categories. So one of them is choline. Tell us why it matters in the context of beating depression and anxiety.
Choline matters in part because people really haven't heard about this nutrient. It's a cousin of folate. So folate vitamin B9 is important. It's folic acid is in the prenatal vitamin because folate and B9 are so important as we form new brain cells and deal with inflammatory factors. Actually the neural tube in utero doesn't fully close if you don't have enough folate. The same data exists for choline. If you don't have enough choline, you have troubles with your neural tube. Choline is interesting because you find, because I like it as a nutrient because it's like, it like brings a little jazz to the party in terms of the debate, because where you find it, you find choline in eggs, in tofu, and in liver. And I like that because it kind of, those are three foods we all have kind of an opinion about, right? And choline is interesting because it's part of acetylcholine and phosphatidylcholine. Acetylcholine is a neurotransmitter. Phosphatidylcholine is one of these long fats that is part of your brain and your brain cells. And choline is one of the only nutrients that's been correlated with anxiety. It's just a correlational study. So it's actually one of the parts of the book we wanted to include anxiety just because it's the most diagnosable mental health condition, but in America, but there's not a lot of data about food and anxiety. However, clinically, we have a lot of data and experience at just helping people, you know, eat more smaller meals or really spot where like alcohols or sugars are triggering their panic, or help them when they are triggered and they're an anxious eater to just, you know, make better choices in terms of still eating to calm yourself down, but choosing something that's maybe more nutrient dense or going to not spike your blood sugar. So choline serves all of those functions. And it's, again, it's one of these nutrients that I think a lot of people haven't heard about. I hadn't heard about. And I think it's one of those that helps as you think about things like eggs, liver, and tofu in your diet.
I want to touch on another one that I feel like people know of, and it's, but they don't maybe really understand what it does and the role that it plays in our health. And that's vitamin A. Right. And I don't think it gets as much as attention as we talk about like vitamin D, vitamin C. People know about those things, but vitamin A, give us the breakdown in the 411 of that.
All right. So vitamin A is interesting because it's a part of an elite group of nutrients that are what are called fat soluble, K, A, D, and E. You know, and when you think about that list, it's like, all right, we've all heard about D. People have heard a little bit about vitamin E. They haven't heard all the magic of it. Nobody's ever heard anything about vitamin K. even though it's this fat soluble nutrient, it's super concentrated in leafy greens. And then vitamin A, you know, we know about vitamin A kind of in terms of related to like eye health, right? We know if we don't get vitamin A, maybe we go blind. But vitamin A is this really fascinating, very big vitamin. And we get it in two ways. We get it in the retinol in a kind of real vitamin A form from animal products, mainly things like liver. But we also make vitamin A from plants, from carotenoids. And this is where things like orange plants, which have beta carotene in them, there are three or four different what are called carotenoids. It's a family of plant molecules that we turn into vitamin A. So vitamin A is one of these things, it's one of these nutrients that I'm watching just because we're learning a lot about how it is involved in brain health and brain development. There are all these kind of very reasonably unmapped, but very exciting kind of vitamin A receptors and pathways. And so it's one of those nutrients like vitamin K, where it's clearly related to mental health. There's emerging science and emerging data. And you know, the only part of our brain that is outside of our skull case are some of the cells in our retina. I heard this on Andrew Huberman podcast, and I just remembered it from medical school. Listening to him takes me all the way back to neuroanatomy. It's like, it's very, it's very comforting to me somehow, but it reminded me of that. And you know, and your retina is just full of vitamin A. I mean, they're retinoid receptors, and retinol is vitamin A. So those are some of the ways to kind of, you know, for me, I guess as a farm biologist, this is that really concrete, like one of our most sophisticated functions of our nervous system is vision. And it takes a lot of brain power. And vitamin A is so intimately involved in vision that it just kind of right there in some ways shows to me how it should be and is on the list. And how it's really kind of underappreciated and underrecognized. And at least a simple message, right? You should be eating more orange vegetables. That's why we say eat the rainbow. And we're looking for those oranges and recommending sweet potatoes and carrots and orange peppers is for carotenoids.
Inside the book, there's a whole section on sort of like actually turning these meals into like reality. And one of the ones that I grew up in a culture that had a lot of spice in it. And I'm not talking about spicy, although there is a lot of spicy food in the Indian traditional diet, which actually I later found out isn't as traditional as I thought. That really started, the spiciness in Indian food started more in the 1600s through the spice trade. But before that, Indian food wasn't as spicy. Nonetheless, there's a lot of great spices that I grew up with that added a lot of color, flavor, and I didn't know it at the time, but also nutritional benefits and brain boosting benefits. So what do you want people to know about spices when it comes to their food and the role that it plays with our health and our brain?
I want people to know that they should use more of them and be more adventuresome with them, because spices, and I'm going to put herbs in there too, have lots and lots of minerality and nutrients to them. People don't really, actually some of the most nutrient dense things, because you know they have no calories basically. And then some, you know, with spices and herbs, we're after, it's like a very concentrated source of phytonutrients. Phytonutrients are plant-based molecules. So when we're eating rosemary and you have all that kind of pininess of all the terpenes in there and all the rosmarins in there, those are phytonutrients. Phytonutrients we think about as antioxidants, but they're really a lot more than that. They're signaling molecules. So you think about something like curcumin, or you think about sulforaphane, you think about these different phytonutrients, and you should think about them as many of them really directly impact your DNA and how genes get expressed. So I think also different spices and herbs are what really help people appreciate more vegetables. And we think about the major problems that Americans are having. It's around eating more plants and doing that in a healthy way. You know, olive oil and herbs and a little bit of salt. That's a great way to, that's how, I don't know, I'm going to say probably 80% of the vegetables we eat in our house. We just sheet pan, lots of olive oil, a little salt, some herbs and spices, put it in there, pull it out and eat it. I mean, I think that they're essential to really helping add flavor diversity to your diet and change things up a little bit. And then there's the nutritional benefits of those phytonutrients.
The food we eat literally serves as information, as instructions, or you can think of it as code that controls almost every function of the body, including our hormones, appetite, brain chemistry, immune system, gene expression, and even our microbiome. Our diets are the main driver of the chronic disease epidemic we're experiencing today, but food is also the most powerful medicine available to heal chronic disease. This is because the foods you eat are the keystrokes that send messages to your genes with every bite, telling them what to do, creating health or creating disease. What you put at the end of your fork is one of the most powerful medicines out there, sometimes even stronger than the medicines you'll find in a pill bottle. Thanks for tuning into this week's mini episode of the Drew Perrault Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you do, as always, share this episode with a friend who wants to learn more about protecting their brain with the right foods that are out there. I'll see you next week.